So is Jacqueline entitled to punishment in the ward of Kelly? And specifically a session where Maharaj Pariksit is willing to show compassion and mercy towards the personification of Kali, who in fear is bowing down towards him because he can understand how much of a powerful Kshatriya Maharaj Pariksit is. We understand from Bhagavad Gita the meaning of the word Kshatriya, for this composed of two words Kshat and Triyate. So Kshat means to hurt, and Triyate means to offer protection. So real Kshatriya is meant in the social system, in the national system, to give protection to the citizens, to those who come and surrender unto him. He gives them shelter and protection. So this system, of course, is created by Krishna so that the saints and kings could rule in a Krishna-conscious manner. And that is why throughout the Bhagavatam we hear the different dynasties of great kings. The lineage of kings will hear towards the end of the Bhagavatam, where the great kings have been mentioned, where the speaker of Bhagavatam is summarizing the topics of Bhagavatam. We hear a description of the parampara system at the same time. So one may think, how is it possible for a kshatriya to be compassionate? Because their very nature is very passionate. They're meant to be killing, they're meant to be at war. But in Krishna conscious kshatriya, of course, Maharaj Pariksit, Arjuna also falls into the same category, because Arjuna was not acting merely for himself, but under the guidance of Krishna. Maharaj Pariksit is acting under the guidance of the pure devotee of Krishna, being instructed how to perfect one's life. So basically we see the personality of Kali showing us the potency of being in the vicinity of a devotee of the Lord. And one purport Prabhupada explains that the reason why devotee association is so powerful is because we get to see the supremacy of devotional service, and we get enlightenment through that association. So association with the devotees of Krishna, I want to speak of Krishna directly, one becomes enlightened and one gets to see the potency and the supremacy of the process of devotional service. So gradually, as Arjuna was also transgressing in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna was enlightening him about different subject matters. Here in the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pariksit is asking different questions as well. Why there's so many different philosophies, etc., what the goal of life is. And Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita is explaining so many purports that Arjuna wasn't an ordinary living entity, that he was merely acting as a normal human being so that the Bhagavad Gita can be spoken. And this lila, of course, of Maharaj Pariksit, it is also there so that the glorious nectarian pastime of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna, can be spoken, and that the people in general, especially in this age of Kali, can benefit from the incarnation of Godhead Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Bhagavatam is full of different descriptions of devotional service, different personalities who practice devotional service. And specifically when we come to deal with leadership, when we come to deal with kings, most kings were Rajarishis. They were saintly by nature. They were putting into practice the codes of the Vedic literatures. So they were ruling accordingly. They were not ruling according to their sense gratification, or they were not ruling according to the desire and the dictates of their bodies. So they always had advisors. The Kshatriya kings were twice born. So we know that twice born, the Brahmins, Vaishyas, and Kshatriyas, they were twice born. And they were educated in always hearing the Vedic texts, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, so many different Puranas they would hear. Unlike today's age where so-called pretenders, so-called leaders, theologians, sociologists, etc., they have no understanding of the absolute truth. And there's lots of speculation. Earlier on in this chapter we hear that this has been going on, of course, since time immemorial. It is not a new thing that conditioned souls have tried to grasp or capture the absolute truth by materialistic means or by the materialistic mind. So Gopa Mishra earlier on was speaking about the different types of philosophy, Kamayamsa philosophy, the philosophy of Sankhya, Yoga, etc. These were mentioned in text 18 of this same chapter. Jaini, of course, explained food activity as the root cause of all happiness and distress. Another form of thinking was the atheistic materialistic Sankhya philosophy, which concludes that material nature is the cause of all causes, and so matter is the cause of consciousness, basically. And this comes out in Kali Yuga in different ways. So the pretentious nature of rulers, kings, presidents, etc., it has been going on since time immemorial. Srila Prabhupada mentions that it is the nature of living entities to want to inquire into the nature of existence. That is there. We are Sachidananda, so there's a knowledge acquiring factor to our existence. However, when this is done without the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession, then we fail to understand the absolute truth, the cause of all causes. So we can have gross examples, you know, even from the Bhagavatam, of kings or rulers who were not necessarily accepting Krishna to be the supreme cause of causes, or who were very envious of him, Ravana, etc. Different degraded kings, that is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. However, in Kali Yuga, there's a great analysis that is given about the characteristic and traits of personalities, not only in leadership positions, but in general, the age of Kali is characterized by oceans of faults. So, later on, the Bhumi Gita is spoken in the 12th canto, where Mother Earth is analyzing, she's explaining the different dynasties, that different kings that have come and gone. She's explaining the nature of people in Kali Yuga. And she, just to give a brief example of a few, the personified deity, of course, of the earth, is explaining how, for example, wretched men become controlled by materialistic women. Uncultured men accept charity in the name of religion, but use it for sense gratification. That men are only interested not in maintaining their wives, their family, children, their family, their parents, but they're interested in satisfying their belly and their genitals. And people's intelligence is diverted by atheism. So this is just a few examples that have been mentioned in the Bhumi Gita about the nature of mentality in Kali Yuga. And it says friendship is based on fulfilling one's sexual desires, and men engage in commerce and economics to earn money by cheating so many different ways. So people, leaders, president, whatever, in society, Kali Yuga, they are characterized by these symptoms. And this is why Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, this is also why Bhagavatam in the beginning is explaining how the nature of the absolute truth is to kick out all cheating religion, is to kick out all types of speculation, that the supreme truth is, the absolute truth is Krishna himself. this is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Whereas in Kali Yuga, there's different, there have been very different philosophies that have been put across trying to explain the absolute truth. Maybe not so grossly going against the Vedic principles, but in a very subtle way, intellectuals, philosophers, theologians, etc., they are trying to explain the absolute truth in mechanistic ways, in mental ways. So Prabhupada is explaining how our opportunity to philosophize about the absolute truth comes out in all these different ways, through philosophy, through science, through sociology. We're trying to understand the absolute truth in these mechanistic terms. And therefore you have different arguments, like nothing is real except matter. This is one argument. That the limitless network of interactive causes and effect, this is the absolute truth, this is how they explain it. And matter is the cause of consciousness. There's a very big movement that matter is the cause of consciousness. However, there's actually no proof that matter is the cause of consciousness. Everyone can testify that the consciousness experience in this wooden table or in a pencil, it is different as compared to the consciousness I will experience. What if someone pinches me? That everyone can directly perceive. Consciousness is not a product of matter. So sometimes they use this argument in the abortion issue, that there is no consciousness, therefore let's legalize abortion. And gradually, as the body, only when the body comes out, it is considered a child, because there is some kind of consciousness. But they do not understand that actually consciousness is a symptom of life. And it is because of that conscious energy, that spirit within every single atom, that actually matter becomes animated. It is only because of the presence of the spirit soul or the super soul that the mature nature becomes agitated and everything is put into place. Without that force, without that principle, nothing can actually happen. Up until the Supreme Lord glances over mature nature, does everything become active. But before then, nothing is happening. So even if we see that matter has always existed, it was there in the beginning, there was a Big Bang, etc., still you must explain what consciousness is. Still we have to come to that point. If you want to get to the absolute truth, we cannot deny arguments against consciousness. We still have to put reasons explaining the nature of both matter and consciousness. So there have been a few doctors actually who are researching consciousness. Actually, even a few physicists have been researching consciousness, and this is explained later on in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And their conclusion is that material laws of nature actually cannot explain the workings, the complex workings of material elements. But it is not possible for our tiny brain, our material brain, to actually understand how different material elements are working, not only in our body, not only in the cells of our body, but in the entire, what you speak of, the universal egg. It is not possible to explain this from mechanistic terms unless we accept the value of supreme consciousness, supreme intelligence. Then one can grasp a little bit of the absolute truth. Unless we come to that point, it is difficult to try and understand the absolute truth, or it is difficult to try and believe that material nature is the cause of all causes. Matter is not the cause of consciousness. So even Socrates was against this way of thinking, this philosophy. He said the causality, the cause of all causes, cannot be explained through mechanistic principles. It is not possible for the infinite brain to try and understand it infant. Maya is not, well, of course, later on as we practice bhakti, we understand that by the causeless mercy of the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, we as the limited parts and parcels of Krishna, can in a very small way try to understand his nature. But from a material point of view, from a materialistic point of view, it is difficult for people to try to understand the absolute truth, as Socrates writes. And he gives this example of his son. He says the son demonstrates to any rational being that it has an unlimited storehouse of heat. But somehow or the other, when we were growing up and we were being taught science and physics and chemistry, we were taught that the sun is just a dark hole. Right? It is a dark hole globe, but rationally we can understand it is giving heat. So the source has to be some unlimited powerful storehouse. In a very rational way, we can understand this point. So similarly, the unlimited examples of personality and personal consciousness in existence within creation, all these interactions that we ourselves have every day, they are contributing us to the conclusion that there is an unlimited storehouse of consciousness. There is a living entity who is unlimited consciousness, and that is how we can approach the absolute truth. We trace out the source. And that absolute truth is with personality. So Plato in his work, also the disciple of Socrates, explains how just the material elements in our body are derived from a great cosmic intelligence existing within the universe. That cosmic existence has supreme intelligence, and that is God. So Plato and Socrates, they accepted the existence of God, and they accepted that God is the he is the cause of all causes. That was his understanding, and that is the understanding that he was pushing across. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, we find that still, as it's been happening since time immemorial, as I mentioned, all these different philosophers, Jaini, Sankhya philosophy, 86 Sankhya philosophy, all these reasons were there in the past and they're still here now, that we have, as Prabhupada explains, philosophers and foolish leaders define the absolute truth in materialistic ways. Jai Shri Shiva Bhagavati, Skuri Tata, Bhagavati Jai. So, the so-called philosophers and leaders of Kali Yuga try to find the absolute truth in materialistic, relative ways and declare themselves great enlightened thinkers. And this is a type of cheating that Bhagavatam is trying to kick out. The title of Dharma in the beginning that is being explained is being kicked out. And why specifically this comes at the point where we're speaking about Maharaj Parikshit as the great saintly ruler, the Kshatriya, it is because the leaders in society are supposed to be pushing real Dharma. He's a Kshatriya king, he's caring for his praja, all the citizens. Therefore, he must take care of their material and spiritual well-being. So it is the responsibility of a leader, the responsibility of a king, to educate his subordinates in the matters of Krishna consciousness. So when that principle is set, then actually society can become sublime. Prabhupada, in one purport, later on in this chapter, there's one line where Prabhupada says, the state can only become sublime if the leader is free of sex desire. Which basically means that the leader is off the body concept. If the leader is in spiritual consciousness, he can actually create a sublime state because he's always thinking about the welfare of all living entities, not just himself and his immediate expansion, like we find in Kali Yuga. Modern day leadership is modern day Kshatriyas, they are concerned about maintaining themselves and their immediate expansions and not taking care of the entire citizens. So only in Kali Yuga do we find such traits or such qualities of personalities who pose themselves or who dress up like saintly personalities, who dress up as protectors, who dress up as those who give shelter to those who try and surrender to them. So Bhagavatam gives a clear description so that we know how not to get cheated. We know what qualities we're looking for in a leader. We know what a leader should imbibe in terms of putting across Krishna consciousness. A pure devotee dissipates darkness. This is why it is very difficult for the personality of Kali to remain in front of Maharaj Parikshit, because he is such a powerful Krishna conscious leader. How can Maya become strong in the presence of such a powerful personality? Therefore, he's commanding that respect. Kali bows down to him and takes shelter of him. And this is a potency of a very powerful devotee of Krishna, that they do not demand respect, but they command it because they are very, very Krishna conscious. That is purity, importance of purity. It forces one to actually surrender. So although there's such an ocean of chaos in Kali Yuga, we do know that the Mahaguna, the great quality of Kali Yuga, is that there's this opportunity or there are all these chances for us to chant Hare Krishna and distribute this chanting of the holy name. And by doing that, the force of Kali is, the tide is actually reduced. Sukadeva Goswami explains later on in the 12th canto, the chapter entitled Puranic Literature, he's explaining how only those who do not come into contact with the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita take seriously all other literatures, take seriously all other types of words. But once one actually comes in contact with any line or verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, one actually gets real knowledge, one actually gets real value. So the analogy that's been given in the Nectar of Devotion, I think, is in the introduction, is explaining how a volcanic eruption in the middle of an ocean, it is very insignificant. So we can have all these other cheating religions, we can have all these other cheating literatures rolling around currently in this day and age, but the vast greatness and the potency of the Srimad Bhagavatam can dissipate that volcanic eruption in the form of materialistic knowledge. So the more we push out the principles of Bhagavad Dharma, the more we push out the wonderful texts and books translated by Srila Prabhupada, we can actually keep the tide of Kali at bay and increase the spiritual potency of the planet. So it is not that we just read these books for ourselves, but actually the principles that are in these books will help everyday persons climb out of these modes of material nature. So in every age, of course, we know Satya, Pshetra, Dwapara, and Kaliyuga, there's a specific predominant mode. So Satya is predominantly goodness, treasure, passion, drama, passion and ignorance, and Kaliyuga specifically specializes in the mode of ignorance. However, Srila Vishwanatha Thakur mentioned that in each age, there's a sub-age that can come about. So just as the other day we mentioned, there can be a Satya Yuga in Kaliyuga. There can be a, Treasure Yuga and Dwapara Yuga. If the devotees are potent enough, if the devotees are organized enough, these can happen. We can push away the modes which are always in competition. This is explained by that the modes are always fighting for supremacy. So the more Krishna conscious we become, the more we push away the modes of material nature. And this, it doesn't matter which age it is. There's a sub-age in any of the ages. This is explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So these Rajarishis who were twice born, they were spiritually potent, and by disseminating into their society or into their country these signs of Krishna consciousness, that people at large were pacified and the citizens were generally happy and life was sublime because their intrinsic needs and values were catered for and taken care of. So yes, there's a great punishment in Kali Yuga because having their mature body in Kali Yuga is like, what's the English word? It's like being handicapped. So being in Kali Yuga means handicapped. Mandasu mandamatayo. We quarrel over small, insignificant things. We have steady minds. Our intelligence is weak. Our bodily strength is weak. Our cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, mercy is diminishing. These are all kind of the handicaps of Kali Yuga. But the Mahaguna is that we have the greatest quality of Kali Yuga. We have this opportunity to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? And at the same time, study the pastimes of Krishna. So later in the Bhagavatam, Kale Dosha Nijarajan, Nastiheva Mahagunan, Kina Deva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Parabrajit. That we can actually attain this great liberation, we can escape the clutches of material existence by taking to this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and studying the wonderful text of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Maharaj Parikshit is showing us how we stand our ground against Maya. We arm ourselves with spiritual intelligence. We arm ourselves with the Buddha Yoga given in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And by doing that, we will not get attacked by the modes of material nature. By acting in such a way that you're always increasing the Shravanam and Kirtanam of Lord Krishna, we can decrease the volcanic eruptions of material existence. So it is very important that we understand this section. This is not only about Kshatriyas, it is about every single person who is striving to get out of the times of Kali Yuga. We're all Kali Yuga residents and we all want to get out. So the process is to follow the wonderful spiritual master example of Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadev Goswami, where he's inquiring how to get out of material existence by cultivating our pure bhakti towards Krishna. And in that way, we'll become motivated to help others also do the same. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comment or question. Or correction.
You mentioned in Sankhya philosophy, just to clear a doubt, so there's two aspects, right? The theistic and atheistic, by different Kapilas.
Yeah.
So what one of them, when the one that's theistic is that everything comes from a spiritual source, and the one that's atheistic is everything comes from materials.
Then just read it here. Well, she's asking us to clarify the Sankhya philosophy because there are two Lord Kapilas. There's the imposter Kapila Dev, and then there's Kapila Dev Sankhya, who also propounded the Sankhya philosophy, explaining matter and spirit in their relationship. And then there's an imposter Kapila, who was explaining more about the relationship, so more about matter being the cause of all causes. So Prabhupada here, so I just want to quote him. Yeah. Atheistic, materialistic, Sankhyans conclude that material nature is the cause of all causes. According to them, combinations of material elements are the causes of material happiness and distress. And disintegration of matter is the cause of freedom from all material pains. So once the body is got free, we're there's no more suffering. But of course we have a different understanding that the matter in this body will stay, and then the soul, the Atma, will go somewhere else. So then this is the materialistic Sankhya philosophy, that matter we call the world cause. But we understand that no, spirit is the cause.
You were mentioning about how in Kali Yuga the living entities have many defects, handicaps, and there may be a tendency to become very discouraged by these qualities when we perceive in ourselves and the people around us. You know, we may become quite disappointed, or use it as excuses why we should get into spiritual life. So, would you like to please talk about that, like how to
how not to get bogged down when we're handicapped. Yes, it is a fact that Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, but we should understand it in a very healthy way. For this in general, every day, let's say if we're sick or if we're not feeling well, the more we meditate on the problem, the more depressed we become. So there's no point. Rather, we should understand that we can make the best use of a bad bargain, as Srila Prabhupada always said. So finally, we have a material body, but we can spiritualize that body by engaging in 9 hours of bhakti. So just as Ambarish Maharaj was doing the exact same thing, engaging all his body functions, his body, mind, world, his spirit and Krishna consciousness, then I can also follow. So it shouldn't be as an excuse, oh, program so fallen, and meditation like Bhagavatam. But we should understand, okay, I have this bed, I have this body, but let me make the best use of it. I used to listen to certain sounds, I can change and listen to different sound languages. I used to eat abominable foodstuffs, I can change the taste of my tongue and only honor Krishna prasadam. So we're not eternally doomed. We're not in eternal damnation. We can actually spiritualize our body and have direct contact with true service to Krishna in the disciplined succession. So we should look at it from a positive point of view. Yes, it's Kali Yuga, but there's a Mahaguna, chanting Hare Krishna, let's focus on that. There's so many faults, we can't even count them. So many faults. But this great quality of having the potent Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, devotee association, the wonderful Acha Vigraha, that is powerful, more potent and more positive than worrying about our little insecure, our minuscule Kali Yuga body. It is much more exciting and it's much more enlivening to focus on 9 hours of bhakti and to focus on engaging our body in devotional service. So the point is not to focus on the negative, but to focus on the positive, and the positive outweigh the negatives. And we can see, by association, we can see how it is possible. By associating with devotees, we can see how the process of bhakti actually works. As Prabhupada said, we're like butterfly, we can shed that outer covering and our body gets spiritualized. So we should see it in that light. We make the best use of the bad body and we get purified.
Because they were like one of the Mahajanas. And one of the Prabhupada writes, saying that Lord Vishnu is their enemy. So how could they be among those kind of people?
Well, one question you could ask is, how could Prahlad Maharaj live with his father, the most powerful demon ever in existence? So for a devotee, a devotee has the potency and he has the intelligence and ability to see Krishna in every situation. So whether it be something we see, our relative view, something negative, good, bad, friend, enemy, a pure devotee is able to see Krishna in every single situation. So Prahlad Maharaj, who was of course born in a demonic family, but he was always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So all these other things around him were insignificant botherations. Where Lord Chaitanya says, Mama Janmani Janmani Shvare Bhavatan Bhakti Ahai Tukhi Chvari. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on that verse of success and explains that for a devotee, it doesn't matter where he takes birth. It doesn't matter what type of family he takes birth. His consciousness is always absorbed in Krishna. Although externally he might be situated in, I don't know, the sub-Saharan region, it might be in Afghanistan or wherever, but the devotee is seeing the presence of Krishna. So also in the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes we have to study deeply and carefully and see how Krishna personally orchestrates the situation with the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. Of course, that is a pastime that Krishna wanted to glorify his devotee. Krishna wanted to glorify, first of all, Lord Brahma gave that benediction to Hiranyakashipu, and Krishna himself did not interfere, although he could have just saw the Buddha as insignificant. Why should he appear as Lord Nrisingadev? Why should he be custom made to appear by a demon in a certain way? He could have appeared in any way he wanted. He could have just, you know, brought out his Sudarshan chakra, right, chopped up Hiranyakashipu. But no, the Lord, he kept the benediction given by his devotee Brahma. And at the same time, he wanted to glorify his great devotee Prahlad Maharaj. There's so many different reasons Krishna acts, but simultaneously he's given pleasure to so many different personalities within that pastime. And for us, even if our family members do not become Krishna conscious, we expose them to the process, they might not take initiation, or in this life they might not accept Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan. Next life, they'll have more opportunities to hear about Krishna. So even though Prahlad Maharaj did not convert Hiranyakashipu, who came to fulfill the Lord's desire, one of the gatekeepers, one of the 12 gatekeepers of Krishna and Vaikuntha, Janvijaya, came to assist the Lord in his pastimes. So in that pastime, there's so many different purposes that Krishna is fulfilling. So we should see it like that. And also for a devotee sees Krishna everywhere. So in whatever situation a devotee prays, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, wherever he may be born, as long as he has devotional service and the association of devotees. That's satisfactory? Sorry?
Yeah, but I was thinking about Bali Maharaj, like how could he be, Prahlad Maharaj, you can understand that he didn't have any guidance like from his superior about Lord Vishnu. But Bali Maharaj had his grandfather as a Prahlad Maharaj. And I mean he had support. So he could have done that sort of thing, that all of his followers, all of his ministers, they were like completely anti-Vishnu, the Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, they're all individuals.
I was thinking why how would they deal with them, like, you know, all their ministers, and they were like, they are trying to encourage them to do activities which are against Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, we should understand that all those living entities are individuals. They have their own relationship with Krishna and they have to work it out. I mean, Bali Maharaj was fortunate, he was coming from a powerful dynasty, and the Lord was very merciful to him, and the Lord served Bali Maharaj in the end, because Bali Maharaj surrendered everything. Whereas his followers, maybe some of them were anti-Krishna, and I said, we're all living entities, and we've had some we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We have our relationship with Krishna, and sometimes we choose to turn away from Krishna. But a pure devotee, in those circumstances, he is not swayed because the whole world is not Krishna conscious. He is always hoping and aspiring that everyone becomes Krishna conscious. But he knows that the Supreme Lord is very merciful, and it's only a matter of time till those living entities become reawakened to their original Krishna conscious position. So a devotee tolerates even the most abominable situations because he is constantly seeing Krishna's mercy.
Gauri Maharaj is a Mahajan because he also he disobeyed his spiritual master to serve Vishnu because his spiritual master was giving him incorrect instructions.
So that's another aspect to it.
Wait till the sun.